Welcome to Quantum Magazine's podcast. Each episode, we bring you stories about developments in science and mathematics. I'm Susan Vallett. After 800 years of slumber, Iceland's Reykjanes Peninsula has entered a new volcanic era, with eruptions causing evacuations. So scientists are using the planet's jitters and whispers to decode the movements of the volcanic underground, and hope to predict the timing and location of future eruptions. That's next.
It's season 3 of The Joy of Why, and I still have a lot of questions. Like, what is this thing we call time? Why does altruism exist? And where is Jan 11?
I'm here, astrophysicist and co-host, ready for anything.
That's right, I'm bringing in the A-team.
So brace yourselves.
Get ready to learn.
I'm Jan 11.
I'm Steve Strogatz.
And this is...
Quantum Magazine's podcast, The Joy of Why.
New episodes drop every other Thursday.
On November 10, 2023, Kristin Jónsdóttir, the head of the Icelandic Meteorological Office's Department of Volcano Research, was celebrating her birthday. Then everything began to shake.
I was taking the day off, and that was just surreal, what was going on and not being on duty.
Jónsdóttir would spend the day staring at her phone, watching the earthquakes bloom across maps of Iceland's Reykjanes Peninsula, southwest of the country's capital, Reykjavik.
Earthquake activity was mad. When we got the INSAR image, it was clear that this was a massive dike. So compared to Fagradalsfjall, where we had the first dike formation of about 9 kilometers, here we were seeing 15 kilometers and much larger and faster inflow of magma. And of course, this was extremely scary.
The peninsula experiences fissure eruptions, where the ground splits open and lava pours out. Since late October, attention was focused on the peninsula's Svartsengi region. The area is home to the popular Blue Lagoon Spa, a geothermal power plant, and the coastal town of Grindavik. The peninsula's last 3 fissure eruptions flooded isolated valleys with lava, but now the town was clearly under threat. The almost constant rumbling of earthquakes in the area November 10th revealed that a buried magmatic river had snaked its way toward Grindavik and its 3,600 inhabitants. More distressingly, that dike that Jónsdóttir mentioned, a vertical magma body akin to a curtain of liquid fire, had fountained up from that subterranean river, stopping just shy of the surface. Quickly, authorities evacuated the town, and then everyone waited. On December 18th, a volcanic fissure ripped open the ground to the town's northeast, spilling molten rock onto the wintry volcanic landscape. The intense eruption lasted a few days and stayed outside of Grindavik. Then, at 3 a.m., January 14th of this year, the few residents who'd returned to their homes were awakened by alarms and text messages telling them to flee. Another eruption. This time, it hit part of the town. By the time it ended about 60 hours later, lava had engulfed several houses, but no one died. Grindavik's residents owe their lives to the proactive local authorities, emergency managers, and the study of Earth's interior. Scientists had been tracking the movement of magma by decoding seismic waves and distortions in the planet's crust. By mapping the peninsula's volcanic plumbing, they're building a better understanding of how volcanism works in general, while also aiming to provide even more precise local forecasts in the future. Work is ongoing. This volcanic crisis is far from over. A peninsula that hadn't seen an eruption for 800 years now finds itself dealing with regular volcanic activity. And Jónsdóttir says geologic evidence suggests that eruptions could continue for years, decades, or even centuries.
Nature is grim. And unfortunately, if we look at the extent of the lava flows during the last such periods, we've only seen a fraction of lava come up. We know there will be more lava coming up.
Fissure eruptions aren't just an Icelandic thing. They also occur in Hawaii and several millennia ago in Idaho, New Mexico, and California. They're hard to forecast. In contrast to classic volcanic eruptions featuring a mountain, it's tough to predict exactly where fissures will materialize. The Reykjanes Peninsula's fissure volcanism is especially peculiar. Ancient lava flows, now frozen in place, reveal that eruptions have afflicted the region for many years at a time. But on either side of these episodes, volcanic activity was absent for centuries. The last period of eruptions ended in 1240. That was the third of its kind on the peninsula over the past 4,000 years, with each cluster separated by roughly 8 centuries. But why does this roughly 800-year period between eruptions exist? Alberto Caracciolo is a geologist at the University of Iceland.
Of course, these are eruptions that happened in the medieval times. We know when it ended, but we don't know when it started.
The peninsula sits atop a mantle plume, a fountain of heat rising from Earth's core mantle boundary. It also straddles the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, an eruption-prone line between the Eurasian and North American plates. Reykjanes's tectonic restlessness has made the area one of the most studied volcanic regions in the world. So in 2020, when tens of thousands of quakes started rocking the peninsula and the ground began swelling, scientists suspected that the commotion might be a prelude to a volcanic performance 8 centuries in the making. They only had to figure out where. When magma breaks rock deep in Earth's crust, it creates earthquakes with distinct signatures. Halldór Geirsson is a geophysicist at the University of Iceland.
There are many things that are causing this movement. Some of the faults that we are mapping, they are just common earthquake faults. Some of these are in direct relation to the dikes that were growing or dike under Faradalsfjall. But most of the faults are faults that do not have any clear seismicity associated with them.
The trick is figuring out which are which. Still, these seismic waves and their properties furnish scientists with the most immediate and least ambiguous clues about the presence and migration of magma. Here's Sam Mitchell, a volcanologist at the University of Bristol.
During the actual eruption and unrest itself, it's going to be the seismicity, just because that really, really is going to tell you what's moving in the ground, where it's moving to. You know, back in 2014 with Bárðarbunga, they could track exactly what this non-vertical dike was doing and where it started and where it ended up erupting. And there was this beautiful time series of earthquake data that showed that. So if you could only have one thing, it would be that.
If it's shallow enough, magma on the move also deforms the ground. Satellites use radar to identify changes in elevation over the course of hours, days, or weeks. Here's Geirsson.
They rely on these so-called synthetic aperture radar satellites. So they are satellites that routinely just fly over Earth at about 400 kilometers elevation, something like that, and they take radar images. And what is conventionally done is to compare two images taken at different times.
Ground-based GPS stations also provide high-resolution, real-time information about elevation changes. Jónsdóttir suspects that the series of quakes that began in 2020 was due to both magmatic migration and the movement of tectonic plates. In Iceland, the Eurasian and North American plates scrape against each other as they shift. Between eruptive cycles, tectonic stress builds up. Then magma worms its way into subterranean crevasses along this boundary. It triggers the release of that tension in the form of potent and frequent earthquakes. But in early 2021, this magmatic machine switched gears. Both elevation changes and seismic commotion suggested that magma was gathering below Fagerhólsfjall, a small volcanic mound next to an uninhabited valley. For many months, long-period quakes had shivered within the peninsula's deep crust. Tom Winder is a volcano seismologist at the University of Iceland.
When magma is flowing up from this presumed deep-ish source, that part of the system is the most difficult to measure. Beneath Fagerhólsfjall, where this was happening, we were able to find some slightly strange earthquakes, so these long-period earthquakes, at 10 or 12 kilometers depth, which have been seen beneath other volcanoes all around the world, and which are still not fully understood. It's still very much a sort of hot topic. It's only with recent improvements in measurements and tools to, you know, extract these earthquakes from the waveforms that we've been able to see them. But they seem to be giving some information about that part of the system, where and how the magma is ascending from 15, 18 kilometers up into the crust. So far at Schwarzengi, we haven't really seen those.
Winder says, though mysterious, they suggest that something slow is happening. He says it's key to note that there's generally a consistent set of scaling laws.
So when we have small earthquakes, which is what these are, they are generally composed of very high frequencies. If you think about like ice cracking or something that you can hear, if you get a small crack, it's kind of a ping. If you get a bigger thing, it's more of a crunching sound, lower frequency. What's strange about these deep earthquakes is that they're still very small, but they just don't really have any of this high frequency information in the waveforms. They're just composed of this longer frequency vibration. And the idea is that that tells us something about the process that's causing them or about the rock that's breaking when they happen.
Going back to the start of the eruption on March 19, 2021, the peninsula erupted for the first time in 8 centuries. For 6 months, molten matter fountained from a fissure next to Fagerolfjall. 2 shorter eruptions followed in the summers of 2022 and 2023. Aside from those base-like, long-period trembles, the overall seismic symphony that preceded the 3 Fagerolfjall outbursts suggested that magma was taking an unusual route to the surface. Instead of gathering in the shallow crust, molten rock appeared to be rocketing straight to the surface from a great depth, the boundary between the crust and the underlying putty-like mantle. Here's Winder.
I think the key thing is that if you expected one to behave oddly, then it would be Fagerolfjall. This fact that magma is coming straight from the Moho to the surface is pretty unheard of. I would say that that's the sort of odd behavior, and this behavior at Svartsengi is actually more typical for how volcanoes behave in Iceland.
It wasn't until October of 2023 that scientists' curiosity turned to anxiety when activity shifted to the infrastructure-laden Schwarzinge region to the south. The ground in the Schwarzinge region had risen, then stopped rising several times since 2020, implying that magma was arriving at irregular intervals, although without erupting. But toward the end of 2023, the pace of the movement spiked. Magma was entering the region faster than ever. By mid-November, a giant sill, or horizontal body of magma, was sitting just a few kilometers below Svartsengi. Here's Kristin Jónsdóttir of the Icelandic Meteorological Office's Department of Volcano Research.
Everybody was on their toes. And we didn't really know what would happen next because we'd never seen an eruption from Svartsengi in modern times.
It wasn't clear where or when an eruption might take place. The quakes that rocked the region in November of 2023 helped to point the way. Initially, their sheer number overloaded the Icelandic Meteorological Office's seismic monitoring capabilities, but staff quickly managed to find the chorus in the chaos and decipher its lyrics. Rock-breaking quakes meant that some magma had left the sill and moved sideways, and ground monitoring satellites confirmed what the seismicity suggested. The ground above Svartsengi's sill had fallen as magma drained. It was easy to see where the magma had gone. The ground around Grindavik was sinking. To a volcanologist reading the land, the pattern revealed not an absence of magma, but an incursion of it. The magma that left the sill had moved sideways before shimmying upward directly below Grindavik. As it rose, this vertical tendril of magma pushed the walls of rock to its sides out of the way. That, in turn, caused the land above the tendril to slump into the newly created void. Later, scientists would report that at one point during the November 10th quake storm, some 7,400 cubic meters of magma was surging from the sill into the tendril every second. Signs of this subterranean shuffling were also spotted inside the nearby geothermal power plant's boreholes. Volcanic gases, like sulfur dioxide, escaped from magma at shallow depths and may signal an impending eruption. scientists saw that gas and a change in pressure within the boreholes, another indication that magma was on the move toward town. A colossal tendril of magma, known as a dike, had sprouted beneath Grindavík, with a crest just 800 meters below its streets. Within hours of the November 10th quake storm, scientists identified a 10-mile-long section of land where an eruption seemed highly likely. It sliced through Grindavík, from a string of old volcanic craters northeast of the town to its southwest. By midnight, Iceland's civil protection had evacuated the town. Construction workers hurriedly built protective walls in the areas most likely to be flooded by lava. Over the next few weeks, geophysical observations revealed that magma was still flowing into the region. By December 18th, based on the ballooning ground, scientists calculated that about 11 million cubic meters of fresh magma had accumulated in the sill. That appeared to be about as much as it could hold. That day, another noisy flow of magma left the sill and overfilled the dike. Rock-breaking quakes warned scientists that magma was finally making a break for the surface. And 90 minutes after those quakes began, it erupted. Jónsdóttir says it was a really fast event. Over the next few days, the eruption drained the dike enough for it to stabilize and settle. That pattern repeated before the January 14th eruption. 12 million cubic meters of magma filled the sill before triggering an eruption 4 hours later. This time, lava oozed out of a 3,000-foot-long crack that emerged near one of the protective walls to the town's north. The wall worked. It managed to deflect the lava. But a second, smaller fissure appeared right at the town's edge, on the other side of the wall, and destroyed 3 houses. Afterward, the sill started inflating again. By this point, scientists had calculated that an eruption would become highly likely when the sill filled with at least 9 million cubic meters of molten matter. By early February, the sill had exceeded that threshold, and on February 8th, another eruption began. A 3-kilometer-long fissure opened near the site of the December eruption, funneling lava away from Grindavík, but toward a pipe that supplies hot water to much of the peninsula. Another eruption came in March. The cycle continues. The geophysical techniques scientists are using to take the pulse of Svartsengi's magmatic heart aren't just tracking the hazard in real time. They're also helping to construct a picture of the arteries that funnel all that magma to the surface. That's crucial for understanding the entire peninsula and how it might behave over longer timeframes. Iceland's 2 currently active volcanic systems are separated by just a few miles. Despite their proximity, geologic evidence strongly suggests that they're distinct systems. Their subterranean architectures are distinctly different, says Tom Winder.
In the Fagradalsfjall, we just have stuff happening really deep, but we can't really see it, and then it coming up close to the surface, and then we have this short period of dike intrusion before it erupts. Whereas here,
meaning Svartsengi,
we have the second stage where it is being stored within the shallow part of the crust, and there we do get pretty detailed information, particularly from the surface deformation measurements, about the progress of the sort of build-up to a potential next eruption.
And yet, puzzlingly, the two systems seem to draw material from the same source in Earth's mantle, suggesting a deep connection. Ed Marshall is a geochemist at the University of Iceland who's studied freshly scooped lava at both sites to try to determine how the two volcanic systems are connected and why they've been taking turns erupting.
There's a lot that goes into it with preparing and risk assessment and working with civil defense. You want to park in a place where the gas and lava aren't going to take you out. And you walk in, you scoop the sample, and you get the heck out of there.
In general, Icelandic lavas display similar chemical patterns.
The petrology can tell us about what's happening deeper in the system from a different perspective than the geophysics. So, for example, in these recent eruptions, they had chemistries that were similar to Fagradalsfjall. That makes absolutely no sense. Fagradalsfjall has the world's weirdest melt chemistry.
Marshall's referring to the specific mixture of elements and compounds that make up its magmatic soup. He says it's not just weird, but unique. Unique, that is, except that the Svartzingi lava has almost exactly the same chemical fingerprints, even though the two are seemingly independent volcanic systems. Marshall says that makes absolutely no sense, but he says if things are physically connected at depth, it would be a pretty elegant solution to the whole problem. Seismic analysis of the peninsula's volcanism is ongoing. Scientists hope to be able to forecast where it will emerge in the coming months and years, as they did with the recent eruptions. As a start, Halldór Geirsson, a geophysicist at the University of Iceland, and his colleagues are using satellite radar to map faults and fractures on the peninsula during this period of unrest. They say this can reveal hidden faults, including those that may be the sites of future fissure eruptions. There's no guarantee that subsequent eruptions will follow the same pattern as Svartzingi's recent outbursts. The sill-dike heart of the system is not necessarily a fixed feature. Here's volcanologist Sam Mitchell.
Every time you have an eruption, you change the plumbing system. It doesn't reset back to zero.
Grindavík's future habitability is an open question, and it remains to be seen whether the peninsula's other towns will have to battle lava. A new fissure opened up March 17th of this year, again sending lava towards the coast and Grindavík. The lava reached the protective berm on the eastern side of town, but so far hasn't breached the town's defenses. Reykjanes Peninsula's new hypervolcanic era has just begun, and it could last years. Decades, perhaps even centuries. Arlene Santana helped with this episode. I'm Susan Vallett. For more on this story, read Robin George Andrews' full article, Inside Scientists' Life-Saving Prediction of the Iceland Eruption, on our website, quantamagazine.org. Explore math mysteries in the quanta book, The Prime Number Conspiracy, published by the MIT Press, available now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your local bookstore.